Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. It's a crazy day here at the Sunday morning wake-up call because we're going to be talking about important topics with many, many people because it's important to many, many people to talk about racism and anti-racism in Albemarle County public schools. Our guests today include, let me check at my list, Dr. Bernard Hairston. He's the assistant superintendent. We also have Katrina Carlson. Am I pronouncing that properly?
You are.
Katrina Carlson, he's a school board member. We also have, and I'm you just told me how to pronounce this, and I'm going to butcher it anyway. Kimberly Dickerson is a committee facilitator of students as they work on this project of the anti-racism policy. And we have three students with us as well. We have Gary and Cyrus and Lizzie from Western Albemarle and Albemarle High School. And we're trying to get everybody settled here because it's not every day that we have six guests in the studio at one time who will be participating throughout the hour, and I've got Dan just running around, moving chairs, and setting up microphones, and getting everybody a chair. But it's an important topic, and we want everybody in here listening and answering questions and being part of the conversation about the new Albemarle County Schools anti-racism policy that's been going on and under work for quite some time now. And I think we've got everybody just about set up. I want to get Ms. Dickerson a chair so that she can participate in the conversation as well, because I think for the first 20 minutes, I want to talk about why and how this was important to the county to get going. All right, so let's introduce. We've got the students sitting in the background, hopefully not too bored as the temperature level in this room starts flying around. So again, this is the Sunday morning wake-up call, WPVC. On the microphones, now that they're seated, let's let everybody, you can hear their voices now. We'll start with the ladies. We do have Katrina Carlson, the school board member from the Rio District in her second year. Now you're going to have to turn those microphones to you as you speak. So good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Thank you so much for being here. We have soon to be Dr. Kimberly Dickerson, who's the committee facilitator for working with these students to get this policy. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
And we have Dr. Bernard Hairston, who's the assistant superintendent at Albemarle County Schools, returning to the program. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Thank you for being here. So we're going to talk about the Albemarle County Schools anti-racism policy. Is the policy in effect yet?
Absolutely. In effect, on paper, but in terms of implementation of the policy, we have work to do in order to roll it out to the level of quality that we're looking for.
Was the policy created because of what happened on August 11th and 12th of 2017?
I would say that that had an impact on prompting discussions. Back in January of 2018, we had a group of citizens to come in to share their concerns about the Lee Jackson holiday that was on our school-wide calendar that was promoted in the past just to recognize various holidays. That was a January meeting. And as a result of that, other issues started surfacing around racism discussions with members of the community and our school board. We moved from there, from those conversations, to organizing a small group of community representatives with leaders within the school division to have conversations about anti-racism. And so we decided that a way to impact that was through policy. And we started addressing the dress code policy. And we considered that this issue of anti-racism is much broader than one policy. And that prompted the need to investigate writing a policy specific to anti-racism.
Do you get feedback from people who say, yeah, but it's, you got Lee Jackson, or you, but you have, you separate, you celebrate, you know, Lee, or you celebrate some of those holidays, but you celebrate others, and you celebrate Martin Luther King Day, but you have Lee Jackson Day. What's the difference?
So we also developed a policy back in 2015 called the Equity Education Policy, and we define diversity as diversity of thought. So we have to respect the differences of thought that we have in this community and continue to work together to understand and respect those differences. So, you know, in the business of education, you're going to have always have differences of opinion. It's about how you respect those differences of opinion for moving forward, learning from your past to operate within the present to plan for what's better for the larger community for the future.
So what were some of the first steps? I'd like to ask Ms. Carlson, and I'm going to start calling you Doctor.
And, that works for me.
And Dr. Dickerson.
Speak it into existence.
I'm just going to assume that Wednesday has a positive, soon to be this Wednesday has a positive outcome. So you know, what are the first steps that did take place to speak this policy into existence?
You know, I have the mic in front of me, but I actually think this is something that the doctor would be more more able to speak to.
Sure. So after the history that Dr. Harrison just shared, he asked if I would be interested in facilitating a small group of high school students in a unique project-based learning opportunity for them to get a chance to develop the anti-racism policy for the county. So I really liked the idea of having a student-centered policy, which is very unusual for policy development. I'm not sure if any other policies in Alamar County Public Schools have been developed through students in the same way. So one of the first steps we took was to invite a group of students, many of whom had participated in a leadership program at Albemarle during the summer and had already had some exposure to concepts and foundational understanding of race, racism, diversity, and we invited them to participate in this unique opportunity. So that was really the first step, was identifying the students, and then we invited some others also.
I just wanted to add that there's real value to having policies come from kind of a student voice. There was another group of students last year that were champions for mental health, and they actually brought it to state legislation and got it passed. So there's just real power to students finding their own voice and developing policies kind of on their own.
Is that why you use the students, but is that why the students based the policy? I don't know how to phrase this, but you had the students write the policy is because of their abilities to do this, and you found it to be the best way to do it rather than having administration do it or school board do it? Is that you thought it would be more well done, or I mean, I don't know. I don't understand. I can't figure out how to write, how to say it the best way.
So first, I want to say that this was a collaborative process. So it began with the students developing ideas of what the policy could be. And throughout the process, we drafted and redrafted, got feedback from the school board, including Katrina, who came in, from staff at ACPS, from the community. We asked community members to review the policy via online surveys and give us feedback. We held several panels throughout the duration of drafting the policy where we had people come in and give feedback on the policy. So it was a collaborative process that centered the students, but it was not just the students. In terms of why they were selected, I think there's something very powerful about recognizing that they are in the schools every day and they have their own experiences every day that they can bring forth, and really giving them some agency and authority to be able to be an important part of this policy creation. So two things. It was not just the students. They were a huge part, but it was a collaborative process. And then also they have so much value in their understanding and their experiences that really they brought forth and that helped to inform what the policy became.
Can I get one of the students? And I, again, we have students here today from Western and from Albemarle, and I'm not going to ask any specific one. I have Gary and Cyrus and Lizzie here. Decide amongst yourselves. I'm not even going to look over there. Who wants to be the first one to come jump up and speak? Just come over here to my microphone. Somebody come do this, or I'm going to tell you all to leave if nobody's going to bother and come over here and be part of the conversation. So, Cyrus, all right. So what I want to ask is, do you feel that you were included as being helpful for the policy because students are the front line for the racism in the school system?
I think absolutely. I think when we were talking during whether it would be school board meetings or just the small meetings we would have as a group when we would come and help develop the policy, you would hear oftentimes feedback from the adults in the room or such that they, it's not that there was less awareness of that issue, it's just that we come into contact with the, whether it's more microaggressions or stuff like that, that may not be brought to people in sources, in places of authority, it's not as well presented to them. So I think that really showed some more value there to be able to have that input coming from us.
All right, I'll get you a better chair next time. And thank you, Dan. And I want to include everybody throughout the hour. I'm not going to leave Lizzie and Gary out of the conversation, I promise.
So Rick, can
that,
I
that question just popped into my head. And Dr. Hairston, please.
Yeah, I want to jump in. So a part of what we do, and this is from one of those, I guess, philosophical leadership points of view.
That's what makes you an administrator, right?
Absolutely.
Is the philosophical
But I try
aspect.
To go beyond the philosophy into action statements. We have division goals. We have a mission statement. And the mission statement and goals are always about the student, about engaging them in our process, having them to own their own learning, to create opportunities for them to be critical thinkers, to be independent students. We look at this project as an opportunity to engage the students and real-world experiences. So, for example, when we first started meeting with these young folks, these students, what I first noticed is that, you know, they looked at me as the person with all the answers. So they would ask questions of me or Ms. Dickerson here, Dr. Dickerson, and they wanted a yes or no response, okay? That's not good teaching and learning. So we had to present this in a way where we caused them to think and to own their own mindset about racism to create change. Because women, we as adults have been trying to address this problem with racism, and we haven't done a good job. So we recruited these students to look at things differently, to do a better job than we've done in confronting, addressing, and changing the narrative of how we address racism. So Cyrus, for example, and the other young folks, you know, they move beyond asking a direct question for an answer because Kimberly and I would not give them a direct response. We prepared ourselves. If they asked a question, we prompted a different response to allow them to think, to be able to answer the question themselves, and we provide resources for them to explore the outcomes that they were looking for as individuals.
Again, this is a Sunday morning wake-up call. We are talking about the anti-racism policy that's being brought forth at Albemarle County Public Schools. Our guest today, Katrina Carlson, she's a school board member. Dr. Bernard Hairston is assistant superintendent for the Albemarle County Public Schools. Doctor, I don't know why I'm going to have problems with this.
You can just say Dr. Dickerson, though.
Dr. Dickerson.
You like that.
He's a committee facilitator for the students. And then we have Cyrus is here with us, Gary is here with us, and Lizzie is here with us from the schools, their students. You know, one thing that we didn't do is I want a definition of racism. And because I'm not convinced that every person on the street would give us the same definition. So I'd like an adult definition, and I'd like a definition from a student. And so, Cyrus, will you swap out a seat with one of the students? So Gary's going to come over here and represent the students. And then I don't know which one of the adults will represent and give us a definition as well. So I'd like an adult to go first.
Okay.
Because I'd like the administrative representation, and then I'd like the student, and then you know, just to go, well, I don't know if that was right at all.
What's your definition? I'm curious.
Well, I read your policy, so I've still got that printed in front of me with all three.
I mean, definitions are important.
Yeah, structural, individual. I've got all that right here. I can read that.
So this is something that we started off with at the beginning of this project, was setting a foundational understanding where we were all on the same page about what we're talking about when we say racism. So we define racism as three different types of racism. Often when you think about racism, people are talking about individual racism or the individual actions between one person and another. So feelings of being discriminated against, that's what we would define as individual racism. But a lot of what this policy actually aimed to address was structural racism and institutional racism. So those are forms of racism that exist in policies and practices, often in ways that we don't even think about. So we talked about the different kinds of racism. The students talked about their own experiences, which are mostly reflecting individual racism, instances where they saw other students be treated differently or discriminated against because of race within the school system. And we also talked about institutional or structural racism, which is also often reflected in data. So we looked at Albemarle County Public Schools data and the racial disparities that exist across a variety of areas in the school system. And this is a national problem, so it's not just Albemarle County, but this also happens in the county. So we looked at the data from the school system therein, and some of it they actually hadn't seen before. So it was a bit of a surprise, I think, for some of them to see that in gifted education, special education, AP courses, type of diploma you're receiving, suspension and discipline data, there are racial disparities in all of those areas in the county.
Yeah, so I think when we came into working on the project, we all initially we're mostly aware of individual racism, that is racism on a smaller basis. Like if I were calling another individual like a racial slur, that would be individual racism. But over time, I think through researching and just looking into the data of our county, we came to realize that an issue that we wanted to tackle more was institutional racism, which is like systemic creation of inequitable outcomes for students of different races. And so I think that was the definition of racism that we are mostly going on for a lot of the policy.
And there you go. Some definitions of racism involved in the Albemarle County anti-racism policy. This is Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on WPVC. We're going to take our first break. When we come back, I'd like to have all three students up here for a second because I want to talk about some of the events that have been happening locally, the closing of the schools, and some things. And the adults can decide which one wants to hang tight and be around to be the adult voice to go with them. I'll let y'all decide that. But I'd like all three students to participate. And Gar, you can just stay here and be on this side so you don't have to move. All right, we'll be right back. And we're back in a crazy studio today, but it's an important topic. So be with us. Albemarle County High School, not high schools, Albemarle County Public Schools, because this goes down to the middle schools.
The whole system.
The whole system. How is this working in the elementary schools? Let me ask that question real quick. I have Dr. Dickerson with us, who served as the committee facilitator. I'm going to start with that question. Mm-hmm. How does this go down to the elementary schools? People don't think about that at an elementary school level.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think, well, we have high school students who helped to write the policy. So in that way, we didn't have elementary school students and their perspective included. But we did think about it, and we had a lot of conversations about what this would look like in a middle school or a high school. So a couple of things that came to mind were that we talked a lot about leveling or tracking, and that's something that usually starts in middle school, although students are often grouped even in elementary school based on perceived ability levels. So that was something that we talked about and how that would affect both the high school level and elementary school. But really the thing I want to talk most about is the education is really central to this policy. So there's an entire section about anti-bias and anti-racist curriculum, class materials. We want to make sure that teachers are prepared to have difficult conversations because teachers often feel that they don't have the training to deliver some of the content that we are asking them to be able to deliver. So that's something that also happens in elementary schools, where teachers can talk about race or racism in a developmentally appropriate way, and we want to make sure that they're prepared to do that. That's going to look different at the high school level in terms of materials and content, but that's something that should be happening throughout the entirety of education in a way that's appropriate for the particular age.
Again, Dr. Dickerson with us today. As we talk about the anti-racism policy, we also have three students with us. We have Gari and Cyrus from Western Albemarle High School. We haven't heard from Lizzie yet, so I'm going to hit you up with some questions. We just had an event last week in Charlottesville and Albemarle. I think people are more aware of Charlottesville because the schools were closed for a couple days. Some threats made online about shootings, potential shootings made that were racially based. But there were also some events, some threats made through the Albemarle schools. I'm correct, Dr. Harrison? Weren't there threats made?
There was one threat. Not sure it was a race based. It was more of a threat of doing harm.
Doing harm, okay. But Lizzie, when those sorts of things are made, and now you've got an anti-racism policy, do you see where this sort of thing, your policy and those threats, how do you see them tying together in a helpful way?
Well, I'm hoping that what will come out of the policy is that those threats will stop being made or they'll go down. And I feel like the policy will address those in a school system. If a student makes those threats, then they will be punished accordingly. So,
Cyrus?
And I think additionally, part of one of the great things I think about this policy is that it's not simply a preventative service level measure of you can't say this or you can't do this or you can't. The more direct interpersonal racism, it tries to span beyond that and to the core of educating the students on what is appropriate and also the cultural historical context of the race in our community. And I think that what this policy is trying to do over time is to make sure that this sort of thing, the threats or the interpersonal racism, does not happen again, because the students are more culturally aware and they wouldn't necessarily be prompted to do such a thing.
The schools in Albemarle and we're talking about Albemarle County. Albemarle County schools are quite racially diverse, correct?
They are, yes.
Is daily life at Albemarle County Public Schools, is there a problem or a concern with racism, or is this policy meant to be a forefront, or is it a corrective measure?
I think that our issue wasn't, is racism happening every day? Like, are we reporting instances of individuals acting racist towards each other? It was more, every day we see that there are more students of color in lower tracks and being punished greater than students who are white for the same crime or for the same issue. So I think that, like, every day that kind of stuff is happening. And so that was why we felt it was really necessary to create a policy addressing that and trying to reduce those instances of racism.
And I think it varies greatly from school to school. Going to Western Albemarle High School, you'll see a very different racial makeup than you would going to Monticello or Albemarle, I think. At least my school I go to, Western, is I believe the number is roughly 90% Caucasian, and I think that while it's not, you don't see as much direct interpersonal racism, it is a well-known fact in my school that there seems to be a tendency to see much less proportion of an AP class or something like that composed of students of any diversity. And I think that's also what we're trying to address.
Like Gari mentioned earlier, so my school, I go to Albemarle, and I would say that it is a pretty diverse school. And personally, I've never experienced racism, but I've seen other students experience it before. And I've noticed that I'm kind of scared to say something because I feel like it may not be my place. And I feel like a lot of people should be saying things, and I should be the one who steps up and says something for these other kids.
Again, we have students here in the studio today who are part of creating the policy, the anti-racism policy for Albemarle County Public Schools. We have Gari and Lizzie and Cyrus with us today. We also have soon-to-be Dr. Kamali Dickerson here on mic with us as well. In the back, we have Dr. Bernard Harrison, who's the assistant superintendent, and we have Katrina Carlson here as well. We'll be returning a little later in the program. In the newspaper, I read about the Sound of Music being played out at Western Albemarle and the swastika emblems being kept in a locked box. Concern about that as an emblem possibly being stolen and or shown improperly, and the director bringing in someone to teach the proper history so that the image wasn't who wants to talk about that?
Yeah. So I when I came to see the musical, it was very clear that the director and came out and said that it's important to be conscious of the context of this film and the meaning of the Nazi imagery. She also requested that audience members be conscious of what they're photographing if they're taking pictures of the play, of not having children photographed with Nazi imagery behind them and taking that out of context. I think that she handled the situation very well, and I think it was presented more in of an educational and informative manner.
I'm also curious. I know that there's been a lot in the news about the change of the how the dress code is interpreted, I guess. Is that the proper word to use with that? A young man whose father, he wasn't sent home for what he was wearing. He was asked to remove his hat, and when he chose not to do so, his father stood behind his decision and took him out for the day. I don't know if I explained that correctly or not, but I'm curious as to how the anti-racism policy plays out with the dress code in the minds of our three students today.
So our policy didn't actually address the dress code at all. It didn't talk about Confederate imagery. But I think how ours would interact with issues like that is our policy hopes to lead students to make informed choices about wearing that kind of imagery and just be more conscious about how others might interpret what they're wearing. So I think that our policy will help teachers, or hopefully help teachers, be more equipped to discuss that kind of thing with their students and help them make more informed choices.
If the policy, Gary, when you say that the policy didn't include anything about the dress code, is that what I heard you say? Were you conscious of the dress code when it was written?
Yeah. So when we were going back in August and all the meetings that we were having about this policy, we discussed the possibility of including something about dress code, and because it was obviously a very hot topic issue, and it has been. And we determined that at the time it seemed as though the possible conflicts with freedom of speech for students at that time, it appeared that it would be either the school board would not feel ready to do so, to enact a policy that is banning it, or just for some other reason. Superintendent Haas, I think he acted upon his own accord with the Confederate imagery, and I personally support it. But the actual document that we helped develop doesn't necessarily address Confederate imagery.
Zee, can you? Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that when Matt Haas released a video saying that they were going to discourage people wearing Confederate flags in the school system, we studied it in my leadership class for about a day, and my teacher was very supportive of it, and he encouraged us not to use it also. So I think that it's definitely starting to work at Elmerle.
Dr. Dickerson, when you were assisting the students writing the policy, I'm curious as to your depth in writing the policy versus mentoring the students writing the policy.
I viewed my role as facilitating the writing of the policy. So what we did essentially was to meet collaboratively and discuss different options of things that the policy could say, could do, and then based on those discussions, drafted up, helped to draft the policy that reflected what the students said they wanted the policy to say. And then we would meet again and review what the draft looked like, what changes they wanted to make. As I mentioned, we had panels, so we invited teachers, administrators, community members in, both to answer questions that the students had and to also just generally give feedback on the policy. So we would meet again after those meetings to discuss the feedback and what the students wanted to then change based on the policy. So I saw my role as facilitating the process, which often meant helping them to have the conversations, maybe asking questions to encourage them to think critically about whatever it was we're talking about at that time. And then helping to move the draft along, but making sure that the whole time it reflected what they intended and wanted it to reflect.
11:37 here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call as we're going through the anti-racism policy here at Albemarle County Public Schools. We currently on mic, we have three students. We have Gary and Cyrus and Lizzie. We have Dr. Dickerson here with us. Pretty soon we'll have Dr. Harrison, and we'll have Katrina Carlson back to talk a little bit more. I want to get a little in-depth about the policy itself. I'd like to get some feedback, hear about some feedback on the policy, and we'll do all that in the last 20 minutes of the hour. I'm curious from the students about racism versus bullying. And I realize I know my gender, I know my racial type. And when you talk about, Lizzie made a comment about whether or not to say anything at some times, and I know that you often hear that when it comes to bullying. Do you say anything, or do you just stay quiet? And I'm curious, does it say anything in the policy about what to do when you see something?
Well, I think that we are always taught to, if you see something, say something. And I think that this policy doesn't explicitly give guidelines for students on how to address interpersonal racism. But I think that it's, with this policy in effect, it will likely give a slight bit more of encouragement for those students if they're wondering if something is okay and if they should support it, that the county does stand behind this, stand behind the idea of anti-racism. And I also think that just the whole overall addressing of structural racism should breed a culture in schools that are more accepting of that.
Has there been, at each school you have, how many teachers? I realize that each high school, let's start with the high schools, that each high school is different. We have the three main high schools. 100? 150?
We have about 1,300 full-time teachers in our K-12 educational system with Albemarle County Public Schools. It varies from school to school, with Albemarle High School with about 1,900 students and Western with about 1,100 and Monticello with about 1,100.
So I would say that statistics would tell us that not all 1,100 are going to go, what a super policy. And I would like to talk a little bit more about feedback after the break. So let's get Dr. Harrison and Ms. Carlson back on the mic, and the students hang out in the background because I know I'm going to have a question for you when you come back. We'll be right back. All right, back in action here, Sunday morning wake-up call. We're talking about racism today. A little more deeper. Dr. Harrison said deeper. That's a deeper topic than we always get into here on the show. But that's what we do, is we like to cover all the topics and get into the important ones when they're out there. Currently on the microphone, we have Katrina Carlson. She's a school board member from the Rio District. Second time around? Second year?
My second year.
I'm sure you've learned a lot, especially if this is your topic of choice. It didn't take you long. We have Dr. Bernard Hairston sitting back down again, the assistant superintendent from Albemarle County Schools. Thank you, sir. And Dr. on Wednesday, where's the party? Dr. Kamali Dickerson serve as the committee facilitator for these students. I'm guessing you really didn't have a lot to do because they know their stuff.
They do.
So we are talking about the anti-racism policy. I threw that comment out there as we finished up that second section. Dr. Harrison, you mentioned the number of teachers and students in Albemarle County Public Schools. And for the vast majority of students, there's a parent or more. The policy has been sent out for people to see. I got my copy. I'm curious as to what the feedback has been. I would assume that the majority of it has been incredibly positive because it's not a topic that people throw rocks at. But I'm curious what you do about the people who say you've made a mistake, or you've forgotten me, or you're ruining the things that I already had positive control over, and how you handle those things.
So, Rick, one of my goals is to focus on an asset-based thinking rather than a deficit-based thinking. So a part of change, it's about how you present stuff. So I am not seeing or hearing a lot of the negative, and that just be me and my circle, because, you know, I'm motivated by the positive. There's a big setback when I have to deal with the negative. So I think that our community, especially our teachers who have responded and parents, they understand that we need change, and this policy is about change. They are respecting the excellent work of the students, and they are respecting the amount of time and attention to detail that we have placed into developing this policy. So, I mean, we can continue to talk about the policy that's been written, but the most important question right now is, so what, now what? The policy has been written. The most important work will begin tomorrow relative to how we implement this great work that's been done by the students. That is going to be key, and it's going to be difficult to do. And that's where we get into the mindsets for change. Mindset is an attitude of individuals such as you and I.
Well, I can't go but so far ahead, because I think for some people it's explaining what the policy is. So I want to go to Ms. Carlson, because I have the purpose here, and I have some of the purposes, and I know this is some of the work that you've done, is it includes disparity, this includes disparities in graduation rates, gifted identification, course participation, special education identification, and more. And this is a lot of work that you hope to do is to work on these, correct?
So, yes, one of the reasons, the primary reason I decided to run for school board was because of the feeling that Albemarle County Schools, while they're great, we are underserving certain segments of our population, and I am incredibly excited and proud of the work that our division and our students have done in order to tackle this problem, because it is a problem that we have in our community. And it's listed. I'm glad that it's put up out front in our purpose, and in just saying things and listing them and owning them is an important step to fixing them. And I like that that's in this policy.
I'm curious as to... Well, let's go through some of this.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to take this on? There are four... I guess four principals. Who wants to take on the four principals? I can read them, but it's not my policy, except as someone who lives in the county. But I don't have any children going to school in the county.
Since I have a child going to school in the county, I'll take that one. The first principle is establishing and sustaining a school community that shares the collective responsibility to address, eliminate, and prevent actions, decisions, and outcomes that result from and perpetuate racism. These are the principles that the board is committed to. So the second principle is eliminating inequitable practices and cultivating the unique gifts, talents, and interests of every child to end the predictive value of social or cultural factors such as race, class, or gender on student success.
All right. So establishing and sustaining a school community that shares the collective responsibility to address, eliminate, and prevent actions, decisions, and outcomes. That's the individual racism, correct?
It is, but it's also written in, it's collective responsibility. So it's not just individuals acting alone. This is creating, as Cyrus mentioned earlier and the students mentioned, creating a culture in the school division where everyone is sharing this responsibility.
And maybe I can illustrate a point. So I knocked on a lot of doors when I was running, and something that I heard frequently, and I can see why people say it, is that, okay, we have a lot of students that are not doing well, but there's nothing we can do to fix it. It's because it's because of their parents, or it's because of their financial situation, or it's because they didn't have pre-K. It's always something, there's something else you can point to. And I think owning that if we all work together, we can do better is an important step of the process. And so that's kind of how I see that, but you can feel free to. That would be an example.
All right.
Yes. Would you like me to continue?
No, keep going.
Okay.
We've got 12 minutes left.
Okay.
So deep topics need more than an hour. Deep topics with six guests need more than an hour, but we have what we have.
Sure. So point two was about eliminating the inequitable practices. So that's about the institutional racism piece. Point three is respecting and championing the diversity and life experiences of all community members to support the school division's mission, vision, values, goals, and objectives. Point four is acknowledging that racism is often compounded by other forms of discrimination, including but not limited to those outlined in another policy, the non-discrimination policy.
I'm curious, it seems like, how do you take racism and grind it down to four pieces?
So I think you can't. Mm-hmm. So that would be my initial response. But secondly, I think it's really important that this policy defines racism. So it's important that you ask the question, what is racism? And it's important that this policy defines it as different types of racism, because once you recognize that there are different types, it's easier to think about what are things that we can do as a division to address individual racism, which is going to be different than what we can do to address the policies and practices within the division, which is institutional racism.
And I would say that's something that as a board member, we definitely struggled with, because every time they brought it before us, it always seems like there's more you could do, or what about this, or what about, and you didn't include that. And it was important as a board member, an individual board member, to say you can't lose sight of the forest for the trees. I mean, you have to do what you can do to at least start the process. And so for me, something that was really important about this policy was the focus it had on data and really calling forward areas we can work on. So for example, there, part of the policy is that to ensure consistency in student discipline, each school shall collect and at least annually report data on all disciplinary actions. That's something that we have a clear gap in how our students of different ethnicities are disciplined, and it's important that we have some accountability. So that was what was important to me as an individual.
I'm curious, between Dr. Harrison and Ms. Carlson, did school board and the Albemarle County main office, did everything work smoothly together in getting this policy going? Did all school board members, you know, was this an all yes vote for making this happen? Did the school board, did the main office say, this is what we want, and you know, everybody there say, here you go, make this happen with no problem?
I think it was a little more, I wouldn't say sloppy, but it wasn't that clean cut. There was a lot of back and forth, because there are a lot of different voices that need to be heard. I do not remember specifically the vote. There might have been one member that abstained. Bernard, do you remember?
Well, it's a process. And, you know, when you put me in charge of something, I'm going to be a different thinker. I always say that I have to tread against the current, because I think it's good to have that difference of opinion.
Are you the ball inside the box that presses that button that makes everybody buzz and jump? And
I don't mind. I'm not a go along to get along person. And when you look at changing structures, you can't repeat the status quo. So my lens is always focused on addressing that status quo so that we don't continue to repeat some of the same mistakes that we have. So if we were having some discussions with board members or the total board, and I felt that we were going down that lane, that stream, where we were inclined to make decisions based on what we've done in the past, I had to push back. So we had to negotiate along. And I also had to represent the voice of these students, who are also about change in terms of thinking. So it turned out to be a smooth process. The board challenged my office to develop this policy, let's say, by, I think it was like October, November. My pushback was, it's not going to happen, because I have to train these young people. We have to empower them. And there shouldn't be a time associated with getting this work done and doing it with quality and respect for the outcomes that we're looking for. This is about racism. Racism didn't happen overnight. We're not going to create a policy and change overnight. So that's the truism of behind the scenes. Okay.
Yeah, well, that's what I wanted. It's 11:54, so only a few minutes left, so I'm going to jump around a little bit to get to some of these questions that I wanted. There's policy enforcement is in here. I'm curious as to how that works. I have Justice 3.B. The division shall ensure that there are various, including anonymous, means for students and staff to support racism and other forms of discrimination. When school administrators determine a student has committed a racist act, the student will be provided the opportunity to learn about the impact of their actions on others through such practices as restorative justice, mediation, role play, or other explicit policies or training resources. Can somebody explain how that works to me?
I can speak to the reporting. That's something that I had pushed Dr. Hosk for, because I was part of a panel where they mentioned that at UVA they had put forth an anonymous reporting system for sexual assault, and they just at the very least kind of understand what was happening in the climate on their campus, and they found it very useful. And so Dr. Haas has begun looking at different, there are a variety of different apps that students can use and school systems already use to great effect so that students can feel more free to report school climate, because it's not something, you know, you don't want to go to a principal and say, hey, I felt uncomfortable then, but it's a lot easier if you can do it, have it easier and do it without having to make that personal thing. So that's the one part of that piece, and I'll let other people speak in.
I'll speak quickly to the other piece about not punishment, but education. So when a student is reported for doing a racially biased or based incident, as I mentioned, the heart of this policy, part of it is really education. We really want students to understand how what they're doing impacts other students and have the opportunity to build and rebuild if there's harm has been happening, those relationships. So it's about community, it's about education, as opposed to just punishment.
And I'm not sure who to ask about this. You've got a student going to a national program to talk about making this happen?
Oh, yeah. This is next year. It's in October or so of next year. We're making a national presentation to an organization. Yes, yeah. Ed Leader 21.
Yeah,
that's pretty, one of the members of this organization.
That's pretty cool how that's come about. I mean, it's become such an event that you're sending a student, I guess, telling others how we did this, and you can make your kids make that happen too. Is that really? I mean, is that sort of an explanation?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So this invitation to this national conference, they'll have a superintendent talking about equity issues, a student as well. I think a parent may be the third. And we were invited to roll out this anti-racism policy from a student perspective so that other school divisions nationally can learn from this work.
I was just going to say that's great. I'm so proud. I feel like our community should be proud of these students and the work that they're doing. It's important work.
As they should, which is why I got a note about that and thought that I need to make sure to mention that in the hour. I find that to be amazing. Just a minute left. The anti-racism policy will be posted in every school, but there's training about this for all the teachers and administrators, correct?
Yes.
How does that work?
So as I mentioned, education is really a central theme. The students had the idea of posting this message everywhere to make clear when you enter the space, you enter the building, this is something that the division is committed to and that this school is committed to. In terms of the training, we can't just post a sign. We can't just adopt a policy. There has to be additional understanding. And it takes time to train teachers and staff, administrators, on what this policy is aiming to do and what they can do in their individual roles to help push it forward in terms of implementation, which is really the next big piece of this puzzle.
All right. And so the policy is running now, but I guess full out beginning next school year after full summer training?
So Rick, there are four areas of implementation.
All right, we've got like 15 seconds, Dr. Harrison.
Four areas of implementation. We have a team that's analyzing the policy, evaluating it, and developing a plan of implementation, which includes the training and all the other components. It's a lot of work to be done to do it right.
I'd like to have everybody or many of you back on to talk again more about it because it needs more depth than even 1 hour could have given it.
Deeper.
All right. Thanks to everybody, Katrina Carlson, school board member, Dr. Bernard Harrison, a super assistant superintendent, Dr. Kamali Dickerson, for helping the students, and then our students, Cyrus, Lizzie, and Gary. Thanks so much, everybody.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Strength is in their fuel. Engineering assistance is from Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SeavillePodcast.com. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning for another edition of The Wake-Up Call, only on 94.7 WPVC.